We're going to continue working through our series this evening in the book of Ecclesiastes. As many of us are probably well aware of now, it's the words of Koheleth, which is the Hebrew word there in chapter 1, verse 1, most commonly translated as the words of the preacher. So the book of Ecclesiastes is likely a sermon to the assembly of God's people. And it says that this preacher is the son of David and the king of Israel. So most scholars have come to believe that this is referring to Solomon. Solomon being the preacher to the assembly of God's people. And what he's doing within this book is he is sharing God's wisdom with them. And the way he's doing it is he's asking the question, basically, what is the meaning of life? What is there to profit with all of our labor, all of our work, all of our desires and hopes and dreams under the sun? What does it benefit us? Where do we find fulfillment or satisfaction and purpose? And so what we've seen through this book is Solomon going on multiple different pursuits or different quests, trying to find purpose and fulfillment. And as many of us have seen through these different pursuits, he, after looking at one of them, he will refer to them by a Hebrew word, and he will call them hevel. And that word simply can be translated as vapor or wind or smoke. And basically what he's saying there is when he tries to find fulfillment in these things, it's just like trying to grab on to the wind. It's just something that's futile. You can't find fulfillment in these things. And last time in the end of chapter 5 and all of chapter 6, what we saw was the pursuit of wealth once again. So he returned to this topic because many times as we're trying to search for answers, sometimes we will go to one area, not find the answer there, but for some reason we need to check it again in our mind. And so it seems as if he's referring to this and pointing this out again to make sure that we're clear on this issue, is that when we pursue wealth, what we find is weariness. We find emptiness in this. We won't find fulfillment or satisfaction. And so what Solomon teaches us and what he calls us to do is to practice gratitude instead, to find contentment in our life rather than trying to just gain more and more stuff. Because as we see, the more you gain, there's the more problems that arise, the more things you will lose, right? There are all these other things that he mentions. And so we saw this call to gratitude, and now what we're going to see this evening in chapter 7 is we're going to see not necessarily a pursuit as we've seen in some of the other ones, but maybe more of a practical guide for wisdom. He's going to give us some just Proverbs is actually what it is. So you're going to see Proverbs within the book of Ecclesiastes where he's going to just share some life advice on how to live a good life, how to do things that will probably relate to what he said earlier with finding contentment, right? And he's going to explain how we can live a wise and good life. And so we're going to see both wisdom through Proverbs, some wise sayings. We're going to see the limitations of wisdom. And then we're ultimately going to see how we're called to view wisdom as a whole. And so let us read tonight chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes. It says, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of the mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, 'Why were the former days better than these?' For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. Do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them all. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city, for there is not a just on earth who does good and does not sin. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you, for many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. All this I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? I applied to my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom, and the reason of things to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here is what I have found, says the preacher, adding one thing to the other to find out the reason, which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not. Truly this only I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. So as I said, in this chapter, you're going to notice there's a lot of these proverbs, which are basically like these pithy sayings of wisdom that some of them might not always seem to be completely connected, right? As you read the book of Proverbs and you'll read a chapter, there's an overlying theme, but sometimes the actual individual verses might not have the same exact thought. So they might be moving from one thing to another thing, but it has an umbrella focus. And I think what he's showing us is how we are to practice wisdom in our lives and how there's a benefit to practicing wisdom. And he gives loads of examples of how we are to do that, right? How we are to practice wisdom in our daily lives. So in verses 1 to 12, I think you can kind of focus in this section and see it kind of as a comparison between two options. If you will remember, as I said last time, we talked about the weariness of wealth, right? And we talked about how there were certain individuals that were so greedy that they started to oppress people, right? And they started to abuse people with their injustice because they had power and influence over others. Well, I think what he's going to be sharing with us now is because there are bad things that happen in this world. There's oppression, there's injustice, there's people pursuing wealth and these different things. He's giving us a choice here of what are we going to do with the reality of life, with the difficulty of life. And specifically, he's going to emphasize death again. And he says, so what are the two options on the table for us with the reality of all these bad things that happen? And the first thing that I think he's going to be showing us is that there's one option on the table, which is escapism, right? Where you basically try to escape life, right? You try to just get out of it. And so escapism is like to numb the pain of life. It's to avoid our problems by partying hard, by laughing loud, and drinking ourselves into oblivion, right? So we're going to see these different abuses going on and basically trying to live up the life as loud as possible so you don't really ever think about what's going on here. So that's one. You have escapism. And then the other one is going to be wisdom. He's going to say, or you can choose the path of wisdom. And what wisdom is going to do, I think, is it's going to root us in reality and then have us think and live accordingly. So those are, I think, going to be our two options in light of the fact that there's both good and bad that happens in this world. There's life and death. What we're going to see is you can either escape life and its problems by numbing and distracting yourself, or you can pursue wisdom and root yourself grounded in reality, and you can live a life in according to that. So, as we look then in verse 1 of chapter 7, it says this. It says, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. So, the first beginning of that proverb, I'm sure many of us probably can resonate with, right? It says that a good name is better than precious ointment. So, what this is basically teaching is that character, right, or having integrity is superior than superficial things, right? So you could smell good, have precious ointment or perfume or cologne on, you could have makeup or the fancy clothes, but ultimately it's better that you have character, that your integrity is sound, compared to these things that really don't ultimately, I mean, they're nice, but they're not that important, right? It's better that you are a nice, holy, righteous person than someone who smells nice, right? So basically that's what it's saying. So it's saying that you need to have real character and not just smell like you're a good person, right? So we're seeing that there's some reality to our character, and I'm sure many of us probably, like I said, can relate to that. And this is a similar thought in Proverbs 22:1. It says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So that's, once again, it's good to have a good name, a good character, good reputation, and it's superior to these superficial things like smelling good, looking good, having the wealth, right? It's better to have a true righteous character. So we see that one, and we're like, okay, that sounds a lot like Proverbs, things we've heard before. Well, now, if you look at the second part of verse 1, you'll be like, whoa, what? This is good, or this is wisdom, it's better? Because he says, the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. Think about that. The day of your death is better than the day of your birth. That one, and you're going to notice as it starts following, you're going to be a little bit shocked at some of the things that he starts saying. And you're going to be like, what exactly is he getting at here? Why is he saying that birth isn't as good as death, or that death is better than birth? Well, I think that there's a couple things. I think first off, one way to think of it is like this, is what happens at birth? A new life is begun, but other than that, there's nothing really that changes, right? The life has begun, which is awesome. That's something to celebrate. He's not saying it's a bad thing, right? Just like the ointment, that's a good thing, right? It's something that we like to have. But what he's saying, I think, is that with birth, what we see is potential. But what we see with death is we actually see fulfillment. See, death is at the end of your life, where birth is just the beginning. So I think what he's maybe saying here is that death is the fulfillment of our lives. So it's kind of thinking about it as when we can come to death, we can actually look at someone's life. We can think about the merits, the works they did, the words that they spoke, the relationships they had, the memories that we shared with them. And I think maybe what he's saying is that it's better to have fulfillment in your life as opposed to just a potential of what your life may be. But more than that, I think what he's also showing us here is that I think the reason that we see as we move forward in these next few verses is I think what he's showing is a coffin is a better preacher than a crib. I think that's actually what he's going to be showing us here. A coffin is a better preacher than a crib, because as I said, when you come to a crib, right, when you have a new baby, that's cute, we love it, we're so happy about the new family member, the new baby in life, right? But there's not a lot of moral lessons really there for us to grasp onto. That's a lot different when you go to a coffin, isn't it? When you go to a funeral, you start to think about some things, right? I think it's actually encouraging us to have sober reflection about life, about who we are, about what we're doing, about the relationships that we're cultivating. And in fact, Psalm 90, verse 12, it says, so teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. See, I think what Psalm 90 is saying here is we need to think about death. We need to number our days, recognize that our time here is finite. And then what this will do is it will actually cultivate a heart of wisdom. It will allow us to number our days, to think through these things, and it will actually make us live, I think, a more proper and a wise life. But let us continue in this same thought in verses 2 to 4. Because after he says it's better the day of your death than it is the birth, he then encourages and he says, better to go to the house of mourning than go to the house of feasting. So that's basically saying go to a funeral rather than a feast, basically. Then it says, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. So now he's saying it's good to go to a funeral as opposed to going to a festival. And he says it's better to laugh, or better to experience sorrow or mourn rather than is to laugh. And some of us may be like, well, I don't like going to the funeral very much, or I don't like sorrow and mourning. But what I think, once again, is I think it's because, not because that we should just be morbid or that we just like these things, but rather what we do is we can benefit spiritually from them. You know, you don't see many people converting to Christ whenever someone's born. you see a lot of people starting to think about the kingdom, thinking about eternity when you're at a place of grieving, of mourning. And in fact, I think that those who mourn well are those who actually can appreciate and experience joy even greater. You appreciate joy so much more when you've been someone that has really experienced sorrow. Am I right? Have you ever been to a place where you were really at a low point, but then you finally got out of it? You've got to a better place now, and you can look back and see where you've come, and now you can really rejoice. You can practice what we said earlier. You can practice gratitude because that's not where you're at anymore. I think it's shaping you as a person. So I think maybe it's saying that these things are good for us and better in a sense because they're teaching us things and they're spiritually forming us. They're maturing us. And I think there's so many times when we will go to a party, right? And how many times have you gone to a birthday or gone to a party? And maybe in your college days you weren't doing so good and going to bad parties. How much spiritual formation are you really gaining there? How much maturity did you, how closer to Christ did you really get in those things? A lot of times, probably not very much. But I know that there are times where I've gone to see someone who's mourning, who's going through a season of suffering and trials. I've gone to a funeral. And those are the times where you really see people really thinking about the hardest things of life. The serious things, right? Because we don't always have the serious conversations because usually we like the levity, like the lighter matters. We like to laugh. And like I said, he's not saying it's bad to laugh. Earlier in Ecclesiastes 3, he says there's a time for everything, a season for all things, right? So he's not saying that one we should only do and not the other, but I think he's saying when it comes to matters of significance, and for spiritual formation, I think that these things are superior. And one other thing, too, I think that you can say, why is death better than birth? Which is, I know, just jumping a little bit back to verse 1, is for the Christian, for those who love the Lord, what is death? It's entrance into glory, isn't it? So in a sense, death for the Christian or those who are in God actually will clearly see that it's the better option, right? Because that's where you're in the kingdom of God. But as I said, I think what he's wanting us to do is we really want to have real relationships, real encounters, right? Real experiences where we actually think about not only death, but these real situations that are hard in life, and that we will have conversations with people in our lives about these things. And that we don't just try to shy away. Like I said, we don't escape. We don't avoid life's problems. We actually will embrace them as the seasons come, and we try to learn from them. But in verses 5 to 6, what I think is we see an example of how we can have and cultivate real relationships that have depth. It says, "It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity." So what I think it's describing here is, as we've just been talking about, right? You can either go to the fun place, you can go to the birthday, you can go to the party, or you can go to the funeral, you can go to the place where people are mourning, right? And he's saying that I think that it shows that you can benefit from these harder things in life. But the thing is, he also says, and it comes when our relationships, the people you're surrounding yourself with, you can either surround yourself with people that don't really care about your soul. They don't really care about whether you're in sin or if you're living a wise life. And what they're called is it's like the sound of the laughter of fools. They'll laugh with you. You probably had some friends like that before, right? You know, you didn't really have any real depth in the relationship. You guys had a good time when you hung out. Maybe you guys like to go eat together, go to the movies, do whatever you guys did together. But you noticed that there wasn't a lot of, you know, depth. You weren't really talking about life's hard questions. You weren't really challenging and correcting one another, right? So he says that it's better in the sense that we have wise people who love us that are willing to rebuke us, that actually will correct us when we're wrong, right? When we're inerrant. So, or errant, not inerrant. So I think he's saying that it's better to have wise people in your life who will actually speak truth into your life. They're going to be real with you. Do you have people like that in your life that are going to correct you, that are actually going to say, hey, I think you're wrong on this issue, and we're going to talk through this thing for your good? We see in Proverbs 9:8 a similar thought where it says, "Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you." So what this is actually saying is that when we are cultivating these relationships with people, we want to have real, meaningful relationships that last, that have significance, that have depth. And what it says is that if you rebuke or correct someone who doesn't care or doesn't want to be corrected, doesn't appreciate correction, basically what it's saying is that this is an individual that's a fool, and they're going to hate you for it. They're going to have problems with you. But there's going to be other individuals who are going to recognize, oh, I was wrong. I know you love me. I know you're trying to correct me. And you're trying to make me better. So therefore, they're going to love you. And I think that this is a good test for wisdom. And now how many of us probably are going to feel convicted now and ask ourselves, how often do we like and love correction, right? I know that there's a lot of times we don't love correction. But I think that this hopefully should challenge us to say, I want to have more people in my life that will do that. Now, obviously, if they're wrong and they're correcting you and they're wrong, that's not good. But if you have people that are right and that they love you and they're trying to correct you, that's a good thing. And we need to welcome those things. And that actually, once again, it brings real relationships and it brings depth to the relationship. So we see then how wisdom is rooting us in reality when it comes to life's problems, the difficulties, the different seasons, our relationships. But then I think in verses 7 to 12, so the rest of this section of verses 1 to 12, I think we start to see some practical benefits of wisdom. So ways that we actually implement it and it makes a difference in our lives. So in verse 7 it says, surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason and a bribe debases the heart. So this first focus I think is on money. How wisdom can actually impact us when it comes to money. And I think what it's showing us here is that wisdom, what it will do or what it could do for us, is that it can protect us from corruption and greed. So that first word there for oppression, some translations might say extortion. And so what it might be implying here is that whenever you are extorting someone, what it does is it causes the wise to be fooled or to come mad. They get discouraged and they have all of this negative connotation whenever they're being extorted or oppressed financially. And he likewise says, and if you're taking a bribe, it's going to debase or darken your heart. And so what he's saying is that a wise person will not be someone that will be extorting others, will not be taking bribes. A wise person will basically do a good job with their product and they'll sell it at a fair price. Whenever they have money, they'll make sure that they're honorable with their money, with their material. So I think wisdom, it protects us from corruption and greed. In verse 8, we see here a focus on being productive and patient, I think. It says, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Now, in some translations, the first part of that where it says the end of a thing is better than its beginning, I've seen some translations say that it's better to finish than to start. And I think that might be a helpful way of thinking about it. So it's one thing. Anybody can start something, right? You can start a project. You can start a job. You can say you're going to commit and then no follow through. But there are others, right, who can follow through and finish the job, you know, finish the work. And I think that may be what it's saying here is that those who are wise will be productive. That they will not just say, I'm going to finish it, but they actually will succeed in what they have started. It's better to get to the end of a thing rather than just to start with it. Likewise, and that might even tie back to verse 1 where we talked about birth and death, if you think about it like that way. Not just starting, but also finishing, getting fulfillment, right? Getting to the end. But it also says in the end of verse 8, it says, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. So I think wisdom, not only does it promote productivity in our lives, but it also allows us to be patient in those seasons. Because sometimes it's a lot harder to get to that point of finishing something, right? Sometimes things are a lot harder than we thought it was going to be when we first started. And so when we find these challenges, wisdom will allow us to be patient in these seasons rather than to allow ourselves to cultivate maybe pride or frustration of some sort. In verse 9, we see it says, do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. So once again, it's saying, if you're someone that just allows your anger or your rage to, you know, just to reign over your life, if you're someone that very easily allows, rage to, you know, to manifest itself and you can't control your temper, this is someone I think that's being encouraged and saying, wisdom can actually help you control your anger. So just think about that. So far we've seen wisdom can protect us from corruption and greed. It promotes productivity and patience. It can help us control our anger. And then in verse 10, I think what it does is it can keep us from dwelling on the past. It says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. I think what this is probably referring to is those people who they look at today's world and they think about how, you know, the good old days in the past, right? They're like, man, things were so much better back then. Or maybe if you've gotten older in life, maybe you think about, you know, whenever you were younger or the glory days or whatever it is.
And what I think it's saying here is wisdom actually helps you from constantly looking back at the past. And what it does is whenever you have these feelings, because I'm sure all of us have had these feelings of nostalgia, right? Where you like something comes, brings you back to mind. You're like, oh, I loved that time. I wish things were like that. I loved that period of my life, right? What I think nostalgia really should do is rather than have us yearn for the past, it should remind us of a feeling that will be perfected in heaven. And so what I think wisdom does is not have us dwell on the past, but what wisdom has us do is look forward to the future kingdom, which everything will be perfected. So what nostalgia or looking at the good old days, what it's saying is, once again, God is present in every season, right? When God created you, He put you in this season for a reason, right? So you're not born 2,000 years ago because God wanted you now. So we don't need to dwell and think, oh, today's not as good as back in the past. I wish things were the way they were. You know, doesn't mean we don't strive for righteousness in our communities, in our nation. Of course we do those things. But ultimately we trust God is present in the present. He has a reason for why we're here in this season in our lives. And so what we're doing is that when we have those moments of we look to the past, let it encourage us to look forward into the future rather than dwelling on how things used to be or how they could have been. And then verses 11 to 12, this is the last part of this section, we see it says, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is the defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Now, what's so good about this is it talks about inheritance here and it talks about money, right? Which earlier we've seen him say some negative things about money. Well, this shows us that Solomon is not anti-money. He's not anti you working and getting a good wage or providing for yourself or your family. But what he's saying is that when you're wise and you have money, it's going to be really effective. Because whenever you notice how to do well with money and use it for good purposes and you know how to save it and you're not being consumed by it, you're not trying to find satisfaction in it, it's actually going to serve to your benefit in the long run. And in fact, it says in the text, it says it's going to be like a defense to you. Have you ever had a point where like you had money in the bank or maybe you had money in your savings and there was an emergency that happened? But the good thing was you had that savings. Or maybe people have credit cards to be their, you know, their safety net in case like their other cards for some reason don't work or they ran out of cash and they're traveling. You have that credit card that can be your defense. It'll save you in that moment. Likewise, what wisdom will do for us, there will be seasons in our lives that get really hard, really difficult. But what wisdom will do, it will actually save your life in the long run. And I think we know ultimately through the gospel, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? Well, when we fear the Lord and we trust in Christ, we know that that's the wisest thing we can do. And that results in what? Our eternal salvation, right? That gives us eternal life. So we can see not only in a practical day-to-day level, wisdom can actually defend you and save your life. But ultimately, when you have wisdom and trust in Christ, you will have eternal life. So we see then there's a lot of these different proverbs that Solomon's been giving us to encourage us and to choose wisdom over escapism, to be rooted in reality and real relationships with depth rather than just trying to numb the pain and avoid these different things. And we see that when we practically apply wisdom, it will protect us from corruption and greed. It will promote productivity and patience. It controls our anger. It keeps us from dwelling on the past, and wisdom can in fact save our life. So with all that being said, in verses 13 to 24, what we see then is that Solomon now gives us the limitations of wisdom. So he says, these are all these wonderful good things about wisdom that we should think about and we should enjoy and apply to our lives, but ultimately we have to recognize that wisdom can't do everything. And so what we see in verse 13, what it says, is it says, consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? Now that's a similar phrase that he has already used previously about how God will make certain things crooked. And what I think this is meaning is that there are certain things that we expect in our lives, certain things we wish that the way they were, but they're not, right? And maybe that could be the other things we've talked about. There's oppression, there's injustice, there's things that happen, there's tragedy, there's death. And there's times that we wish that we could just control everything and just make it all right, make it straight. But what it's showing us here is that ultimately wisdom cannot straighten out what God has made crooked. Sometimes God will want things to be the way they are, and no matter how wise, no matter how much knowledge we have, we can't control everything, right? Like the weather, right? We were talking about the weather. There might be a storm coming in tonight, right? The thing is, there are certain things you can do to prepare for a storm, but ultimately, a storm's going to come, Right? The storm's gonna, we can't control the weather in a sense, right? So what we're seeing here is that there are certain things in life that we just can't straighten even whenever God allows them or wants them to be crooked. And then in verse 14, it kind of goes in a little, it drills in a little bit deeper on that same thought process, because it says, in the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. So now what this is showing us now is that there are good days and that there are bad days, and they all come from the hand of God. So we have to be willing to accept the fact that sometimes God is going to give us prosperity and sometimes God is going to give us adversity. Are you willing to receive both of those with open hands? Job says something very similar to that, right? We are to receive both prosperity or blessing as well as the difficult seasons, the adversity, because we know that in those, God will test us, and through testing, he can make us more mature, right? He can make us more complete. So God will even use those moments for our spiritual formation. So we see this this statement about that, but then in verse 15, what we also see is this practical example that probably would have plagued Solomon or concerned Solomon, where we see that there are the wise who are the righteous who are perishing, but we also see that the wicked are prospering in many different examples. So Solomon probably saw this a lot in his kingdom, where there were people that were righteous and they're all dying, and there are wicked people that are continuing to flourish and prosper. And what we're seeing here, I think, is it's describing the fact that wisdom will not always be able to explain why that happens. God's going to allow difficult things to happen, good, bad things to happen. And sometimes we're going to see a situation happen, and maybe you've done this before, if you've ever had to counsel someone that's going through tragedy. You don't tell them, I know exactly why this is happening, God is doing this because of this. We don't always know that, and many times it's actually probably insensitive to say we know exactly why God is doing what he's doing. And sometimes it's just rather to say wisdom will not always let us have the answers. We can't always explain it. But what I think we're called to do in those moments is trust that God knows. God has a reason. God has an explanation for it. And so what we then do is we trust God, and then we wait for his wisdom to come to us. We ask God to give us wisdom. And James 1:5, it actually says that we can do those things. So if you come to those moments where you're like, God, I don't know why you're allowing this to happen. I'm feeling like I really can't explain this. What we do is we recognize that our wisdom is limited, but we can ask God to give us wisdom, and he might even give us some answers for why he's allowing these things to happen. Maybe he's showing us or teaching us something. And then what we do is in verses 16 to 18 is we see that there's this really interesting phrase or a couple of phrases where it says, do not be overly righteous nor overly wise, why should you destroy yourself? And I know that there's some other verses there in the same thought process. But that's something that you read, just like some of the other ones, and you're like, do not be overly righteous or overly wise? You're like, well, isn't that exactly what we as the church are supposed to do? And then, like I said, and then later in the same section, it talks about that you don't be overly wicked nor be foolish. And they're like, well, wait, can you be a little wicked then? Is it okay to be a little wicked, a little foolish? Like, what is Solomon getting at here? Well, what I think he's telling us is that righteousness and wisdom could become idols in our own lives. See, what we do is, once again, remember, if you go all the way back where Solomon tried to pursue wisdom and try to find purpose and satisfaction and wisdom just in his knowledge, he's saying that there was no fulfillment there. So if you try to be overly wise or overly righteous, what I think that's saying is you're trying to get fulfillment in your knowledge. You're puffing up with your knowledge and your wisdom. Or you're becoming self-righteous. You're doing all the righteous things like the Pharisees, and you're thinking, oh, I'm really righteous, so therefore I'm superior. And so what you're doing is you're making an idol out of these things. And so I don't think he's saying, you know, you can sin a little bit, but not too much, and you can be wise, but don't be too smart, right? What he's saying is here is you need to know the limits of wisdom. Actually, that's actually a part of wisdom. A part of wisdom is knowing that wisdom has limits, right? It is not God itself, right? God is God. Wisdom is meant to be a tool. So what we then see is in verse, I think it's 18. Yeah, verse 18, it says, for he who fears God will escape them all. So that's actually the key to finding balance in this situation. So if you don't want to become too wise or too foolish or too righteous or too wicked, what you do is you fear God. That's what we've been talking about, and that's actually the main teaching of the whole book is that's the answer, is fear God. When you have a right relationship with God, you will find balance in your life of how understanding how to live righteously, how to pursue wisdom. So we see that wisdom is a good thing, but it's not the ultimate thing. And in verse 19, I think we actually see that same thought process. We see here that wisdom can make you great, but not God. I think that's the next thing that we're seeing in verses 19 to 24. Wisdom can make you great, but not God. So we've already seen wisdom cannot straighten what God has made crooked. Wisdom cannot explain why the wicked prosper and why the righteous perish. And we also have seen that wisdom itself is not God. But now what we're seeing is that wisdom cannot make you God. So in verses 19, it says, wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city. Now, I actually quoted that a couple of weeks ago, I believe. So what this is describing is when you have wisdom, that's an awesome tool. That's going to be super effective in your life. It's actually going to allow you to get to the point where you can overcome 10 rulers of a city, right? Just by having wisdom, you can do all of these awesome things. But even though we see there's this merit to wisdom, in the very next verses to 24, what you're going to see is it also shows how even though you're super wise, or even though you might be pursuing righteousness, it starts to describe how all of us still are sinners. It actually describes none of us are really righteous. And in fact, Solomon says, even though I pursued wisdom and I was so adamant about pursuing wisdom, what I found was that it was still afar off. So what he's showing us is that wisdom can be good, it can benefit us, but ultimately we're still never going to be perfectly righteous, and we're never going to have all of the answers, no matter how hard we try or we strive after it. And so in verses 25 to 29, then I think what we're seeing is the solution to the problem. See, it describes in the last few verses, it describes how there's this woman being personified. I think this is describing what we see in the book of Proverbs as Lady Folly. You have Lady Wisdom and you have Lady Folly, which are personifications of these things. And it describes how Lady Folly is seductive and will try to call you into living a foolish life, into doing the things that we've described about escapism, avoiding the problems, just living it up, partying, all these things. But what it describes is that when you allow that to happen, you get trapped. And it's actually worse than death. And so what the solution is in verse 26, and it says, only those who seek to please God can escape her. And so I think what the solution is then, is that when we are thinking about wisdom, right, and we're thinking about all of these things, the way that we find balance, the way that we don't get entrapped to Lady Folly, is that what we do is we seek wisdom to please God. You gain knowledge not to be a theological snob, but rather because I want to serve God better. That's the answer. Your goal in life is to learn things and then live out a way to please God. Because at the very last thing, what it says in this chapter is it says that there are individuals who have gone after their own schemes. God made us upright. That's, I think, described in the garden, wherever he created Adam and Eve and he made them sinless. Right? They were good in the garden. But then man has many schemes, and we see that we all go after other pursuits. And that's the problem, is we allow our wisdom to get us a little bit of the way, and then we use that wisdom to basically jump with Lady Folly. But what it's saying is use that wisdom as a tool to please God and to keep the fear of the Lord at the center and goal of your life, which ultimately we find true purpose and satisfaction in, and then you can have comfort and confidence that wisdom will benefit you in this life. So we see then wisdom given for life, we see the limitations of wisdom, and we see finally that we are to seek wisdom to please God.